It's time for another GoldSeek.com radio episode. Today's featured guest, Arch Crawford. Guest uses technical analysis and the planetary alignments to find anomalies and identify patterns in the financial markets. Arch has been at the helm of Crawford Perspectives for over four decades. Welcome back, Arch Crawford.
Well, thank you. I've had the newsletter 41 years. My experience in the market goes back to December 1950.
That's got to be 60 plus years.
Yes.
A lot going on in the markets. You want to just kick off with the U.S. equities market. We had a little pullback.
Well, we've had rising wedge patterns in both the SPX, the S&P cash, and the Dow Jones cash. And I said they usually break to the downside. And actually, the Dow Jones one broke before my July letter. So I mentioned that it was the weakest and was leading on the downside. So in the meantime, the SPX broke down, stopped just below the 50-day moving average and on a significant trend line, and rallied all the way back up and passed the high, but to the bottom of the rising wedge. And now it's dropped away from it two or three days, and that is just a perfect sell signal. It's a top on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, which is before the FOMC meeting. The FOMC usually takes the market up for the 2 days, and I want to be doubled up short by 1 o'clock latest.
Don't you agree that shorting in a massive multi-year uptrend, shouldn't we qualify by saying that's very much a trader's mentality, looking for very brief anomalies in the market? Is that fair to say?
Fair to say, but I believe that the deterioration is more serious than that, particularly in the new highs and new lows. And I find that after a period of new lows being very low, and they rise up to 40 or better for 3 days in a row, that is a short-term sell signal. Well, the last 9 days, we've had 2 days over 40 and then not. 2 days over 40 and then not. 2 days over 40 and then not. So it's flirting with the sell signal, but it has not given it. But the SPX kissing the bottom of a rising wedge pattern is a little more significant. And we're going into the Mercury retrograde and between eclipses.
Don't forget the blood moon.
Well, that was the eclipse. Lunar eclipse was the of the last century.
The majority of our listeners today, unlike I'm sure your subscribers, the majority of them are buy and hold portfolio builders. That's what we advocate here. We have no problem with traders. We should really make it clear that you're not happy with the short-term price action. You probably would concede that we could easily see a 50 to 100% doubling from the current share prices. You don't see the Dow at 50,000 or 75,000?
It'll be because of a rampant runaway inflation and not because of value.
You know, Martin Armstrong, he sees money flows that simply can't find a yield or any security worthwhile. As the U.S. dollar and dollar-denominated assets as the refuge of last resort, and certainly the U.S. equities money flows could continue to remain positive for a couple more years. That's what makes the markets, right? Different perspectives. I think we've got a good feel for equities. Arch says let's stay away from them for a while. Let's move on to the precious metals. You know, we had really robust economic growth, apparently a little less than was expected, but 4.1% GDP from April through June, first quarter, fastest pace in years. And I'd like to know if you expect that to continue and what it just might mean.
You were asking me about the metals.
I was leading up to that and the potential for inflation, a robust red-hot economy, strong stock market.
When I wrote the July letter, it had broken a minor uptrend line, a light line on my chart. And I said, minor break, will it get worse? And sure enough, it got worse. And then it broke the heavy, and now it's broken the 200-day moving average, a 200-week moving average, excuse me. I don't see any positives about it, except that we are near fairly strong support at 1,200, and it's now 1,234. I'm not positive on them right now. I think everybody should have some that they should leave to the next generation, because the dollar always goes down in value over time. So you should have something to negate that. And of course, maybe the Bitcoins could do that. We don't know yet. They haven't been going around that long.
You know, we see maybe a 20 to 30 fold climb in the next 3.5 years by 2022, potential. But it's one of those opportunities where we like to use the proviso, this can just as easily go to zero as it could go to the moon. The big thing that's been bumping up the market, as we understand it, is that a major investment house opened up a Bitcoin and cryptocurrency trading desk. When word of that got out, we were just about to break down into a bear market. If we break below 5,700, Katie bar the doors, here comes 3,000 or 4,000. That precise moment as it just stabilized, this news came out. Some major hedge fund or institution that they were buying hand over fist has opened up a trading desk, so they have dedicated traders on that market so that they can distribute them among the accounts, their accounts and their clients. That was the word on the street, and frankly, I haven't read too much more about it at this point.
December newsletter, I wrote about a certain that was likely to be a top level market, stock market or certain groups or currencies or even metals. I don't remember if I specifically mentioned Bitcoin or not, but the date that I mentioned for the top, I didn't realize was a Sunday, and it was the exact top day in the Bitcoin.
Yeah, it was looking awfully toppy there at 20,000. We issued our buy on Goldseek at around 900. For the GBTC ETF, for Bitcoin ETF. And we started getting very nervous around 10,000. So I have to admit my exit was a little early. But if you think about it, it's still under 10,000 today. So maybe that exit is a little more insightful in retrospect in the rearview mirror. But
in today's newsletter, it has just in the last week or two broken up through a downtrend, willing to begin accumulating it again.
It moves at 5 to 6 fold a typical market Bitcoin. If you were a weekly trader, you could trade it day to day because of that differential there. And I think that's the general consensus in the markets. It moves remarkably quickly. So if we've just witnessed a bear market, which on a percentage basis, it certainly represented, on a longer term logarithmic chart, I would argue it was just a blip. But if we've just witnessed a bear market, most markets would take 4, 5, 6 years to do that. And we've probably completed one, we hope, a fraction of 4 or 5 years, you know, in a matter of 7 or 8 months. I do think you have to look at it in perspective. If you recognize that 99% of that percentage change upside occurred within a 2-week period, step back a little bit and say, well, we had a frothy moment like we tend to do at the end of the year, almost every year. Let's move on to the FOMC. This week, policymakers will make a decision on the benchmark overnight lending rate. Currently, the Fed funds futures are showing virtually zero odds or probability of an upcoming meeting. About 90% that we will see them hold pat until the September meeting, where we'll almost certainly see another quarter point bump up. And then December, again, about 2/3 probability of another final rate hike, let's hope. What do you think? How's this going to impact the markets?
I think this is another one of those meetings where you have to pay close attention to what they say rather than what they're going to do. So we'll be paying attention. I said before the last one that if they raised again, it would tank the market, and it did, to be a little more cautious.
So we'll be looking for forward guidance from the Fed following the meeting. And then we'll look for those Fed minutes from the Fed speak, the rhetoric. Fed governors, I guess it's now Jerome Powell is our current Fed chief, who probably reports directly to the Treasury Secretary, Robert Mnuchin, if I'm not mistaken. So that's what we have to look for. So in other words, it looks like a non-event. More than likely, they hold rates steady. And as long as they don't say anything too scary, it's more of the same.
I just don't think we'll have too many non-events here with Mercury retrograde and it's still between important eclipses. Anything can happen.
So anything could happen could be, let's say, a deterioration in negotiations with the trade war, current trade tariffs that are in place with our top trading partners, as well as maybe North Korea. We might see some deterioration there or some rogue event. Who knows? That's what the constellation seemed to imply.
Anything could happen. You know, it's Mars has been the closest and the brightest, And of course, we have all these fires going.
Let's talk about Redding, California. This is a disaster, a human tragedy, not just human, but ecologically, wildlife, pets, homes, unfathomable. I mean, just after last year, one of the worst series of fires in Southern California. Now it's Redding, California, where they've lost close to, one of the reporters talked about 120 miles square, and she was showing a subdivision burned to the ground. I've reached out to the governor and their fire authorities in California, but I believe I have a really doable solution to much of this carnage that's going on. I noticed something in last year's fires. I think I may have mentioned this to you. They would show neighborhoods just wiped out, embers, nothing but smoke and embers. And there'd be one lone building in the middle of it standing, or two. And guess what those two buildings had in common that the other buildings did not? One had a metal roof. The other had a terracotta roof. Embers flying through those California winds, gusty winds. The embers remain live. They land on a tar roof, but within 15, 20 minutes, you have an inferno. If you will just incentivize, give an economic tax break incentive for people and help them out, for people to switch out from tar roofs, it doesn't have to cost more than $2,000 to $5,000 per home. This is not like rebuilding a whole neighborhood. So my idea was then, since the authorities would not listen, why not contact the insurance companies and say, give them massive breaks because your claims will be a tiny fraction of what they would have been otherwise. Well, moving on here, clearly the techs did tumble last Friday. They were terribly happy. A few bucked the trend. People very disappointed in Facebook, its biggest one-day loss in market capitalization. Okay, in the U.S. dollar, I've never seen it struggle like this to get over resistance. At least six or seven failed attempts in the weekly chart to break the, I want to say it's the 200-period moving average. Do you expect the greenback to reassert itself here on the fact that we have probably two more rate hikes coming down the pike in 2018?
Well, the dollar index has been hanging between 93 and 95 for a couple of months. And although it's been up over 95, I don't think it's closed above 95. It has only been once. My guess is that it will pull back down to the 91 level, and that would give us a, if it goes down to 91 and then comes back up to 95, it'll be a perfect hit and shows a bottom pattern of about a year and a half long. I would say that would give us the possible upside. If it doesn't turn into that, then much more questionable how it's going to end up.
And anything else? Crude oil bounced last week. Do you see increasing tensions in the Middle East, which always, almost always seems to be the case? Do you see crude oil continuing much higher?
The story this week is that the world usage has exceeded the input. The outflow has exceeded the input.
Okay, so peak oil.
Yeah. So that leaves us in a condition where it could spike on the near term, but I don't think it'll spike on the long term.
So you think then economic conditions worldwide may slow? I see something a little different. I mean, it's not to say that you don't make a valid point here, but I personally think that with the current leadership we have in the United States, that as much as their blowback as we've had from the population, the corporations just love it. As long as they're happy in hiring and their profits remain relatively strong. Another important caveat, let's not enter a trade war. I know that word has been overused, I think you might agree here, but if this were to accelerate and every single good or the overwhelming majority of goods imported and exported by our top trading partners and the U.S. became subject to this insipid tax, wouldn't you agree that might just change all the economic models?
About that, I think that Trump is probably doing the right thing in demanding more, at least more fair action in the tariff situation. And he says what he wants to do is have no tariffs, but apparently the United States has agreed to take greater burden of tariffs than they dish out. And I have the feeling that our politicians have been taking money under the table to give a bad deal to America and a good deal to the other place, country, whichever.
It's interesting you'd say that, because we had a guest, Louis Navelier, good friend of the show for over a decade. He knows Larry Kudlow personally. He's been on Larry's show, who sadly had a heart attack, as I understand it, in the North Korea negotiations. As I understand it, he's a key advisor on this trade tariff situation in Washington. According to Louis Navelier, the ultimate goal here is sound, to reverse extremely unfavorable and very unfair protectionist policies that have been in place for decades. And as a result, it might just send economic conditions even higher or into even a more robust position. That's our hope here.
There is so much hate against Trump that I don't know if there'll be people on the side of trying to hold the market up, and there'll be people on the side of trying to tear the market down to make him look worse.
We don't cover any of that here, but you probably make a good point. It will be something to watch closely. You know, maybe that's the catalyst that ignites what you're seeing in the constellations and the heavens. Who knows? Let's hope not. I don't like hearing all this talk of potential civil war in the blogosphere. People are very upset. I've never seen such polarity.
It's heavy propagandizing 24/7.
Yeah, I think it's the propaganda machine is certainly running overtime, tail wagging the dog or vice versa. The other interesting question here is, are these movements being financed by enemies of the state? Get off my soapbox here. Parting thoughts for listeners on the markets.
Well, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. Everybody has their own idea about it. And I would say, I like what Art Cashin always says. Be careful, pay attention, and be ready to jump.
Yes, for the fleet-footed folks, that's probably really good advice for the rest of us. You know, start reallocating some capital away from equities into more safe havens at this point, like the precious metals. Why don't you tell people a little bit more about Crawford Perspectives?
Well, this is 42nd year in publication, and we've been number one in several markets over several years at a time going back, so... But we have had our bad years, too, and it's like nobody is perfect on that score in the markets. But I think we have about as good a record as the last 30 or 40 years as anyone in print.
And not to toot my own horn, I'm approaching my 20th year with the Alpha Stocks Gold and Silver Review. All right, Arch Crawford, great stuff as always. Please return.
Sure. Thank you.